Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Kaz. Joining me now from First Up, from TSN Edge, it is Aaron Karolnik. AK, how you doing, my man?
I'm great, Matty. Great to be with you. A very brisk afternoon outside. You know, those are very limited things for someone who's done work at 10 a.m. to do on the daily. So took about a two-and-a-half-hour stroll, and it was not very pleasant. But, you know, here we are right now, so...
I know. It reminds me before I would be doing the same thing. Gym in my building was closed. Jogging outside when it's really cold sucks. Ugh. There's nothing else to do. So you just pack on the podcasts, get all wrapped up, and then we both do the same thing. The 2+ hour walk around Toronto. And the debate is, do I go west, do I go north, or do I go east? You know, that's really it.
That's a very inspiring lifestyle I lead, but such is life until at least January 26th, and then we'll get going. But fortunately, my evening's spent just gambling in a degenerate fashion these days, so 7 p.m., not far off.
And by the way, let's first give a shout-out to Alex Kerfoot, because yesterday on the show, I'm like, take the puck line. And with 16 seconds left, it didn't look like it was going to happen. Kerfoot just trying not to ice the puck. I don't know how it got past Evan Bouchard and just weakly rolled into the net. I'm watching that last 16 seconds and just fist pumping at that moment.
There were, I imagine, like 95% of the handle on Leafs and Oilers last night was on the Leafs minus a goal and a half. And, Kerfoot, a hero to many out there, including friends of mine and different group chats I have about betting who, like, no one was betting the Leafs minus 290 or minus 300. You may as well just try to find them on the puck line. And that's what a lot of people did. And Alex Kerfoot, he hooked up the gambling community last night in a big fashion, a clutch goal, and certainly not something that, you know, bettors deserve to win with that goal, but such is the betting lifestyle. You win some, you lose some, everything kind of balances out. The tough losses are balanced out by the glorious victories, and last night would certainly be one of the latter.
So let's discuss week 18 in the NFL, and how I'm going to approach this week is all about performance bonuses. Like, take Chris Jones, the all-star defensive lineman for the Kansas City Chiefs. He has 9 sacks. If he gets 10 sacks, he gets a $1.25 million bonus. Ooh. I'm going to take the over on the player prop bet, because usually for prop bets, it's 0.5 sacks. I'm going to bet the over on, like, Chris Jones. Like, I am scouring, and I've got, like, tons of them, like, from A.J. Green to Stephon Diggs to Marcus Golden. Like, that is where I am looking at for Week 18 for my betting.
Well, yeah, and that all makes sense. I will say, Vegas, they're not stupid. Like, you know, if you know this information, Matthew, I'm going to guess they'll find people down in Las Vegas.
I'm aware of that.
And a prime example of that would be Cooper Kupp, right? He needs, I think, 136 receiving yards to, quote-unquote, break the all-time record in 17 weeks as opposed to 16. But he still would have the all-time receiving record. And all year long, Cooper Kupp's been somewhere between 90 and 105 yards. Yet this week, you see his receiving total listed at 126.5 because
I'm taking
the prevailing wisdom. You're taking the under?
I'll tell you why I'm taking the under. He said last week that breaking the record in 17 games versus 16, that it just doesn't mean the same thing. Mm-hmm. Also, this game matters for seeding. And so it's not like, oh, we're up by a ton. Let's just feed Cooper Kupp 7 bubble screens to get him the number. So I am actually, that is one, because I'm doing overs all over the place on these targeted player prop bets. But there, I go under. I'll give you an example of the other side. Kyle Pitts needs 59 receiving yards for the single-season rookie tight end record. What the hell does Atlanta have to play for? Nothing. It's like, all right, Kyle, let's get you this record so you don't hate us.
I think, number one, send me the list you've compiled on this, because I think this is a brilliant way to look at it and a very sharp way to look at it. I will say that the books will adjust to some extent, but when you talk about defensive players, like the sack numbers and the tackles and whatever the incentives are, the players definitely know about these for sure. I don't know if the books necessarily value those to the same extent, but with regards to Kupp in particular, I don't think there's going to be any DBs on the other side for Cooper Kupp. We're just going to lay down like Brett Favre did for Michael Strahan back in 2001.
How dare you? Michael Strahan got that record the legal right way.
Yeah, okay,
shame on
whatever.
You.
I don't know how much money Michael Strahan and those gap teeth slid over to Brett Favre that afternoon, but that record may very well be in danger as well with T.J. Watt, who has gone. You want to talk about the betting for Defensive Player of the Year? T.J. Watt was plus money, and all of a sudden, he racks up four sacks, and I saw him as he's minus 2,000 now, probably because Micah Parsons has been ruled out for, I believe he's been ruled out. I think the whole COVID situation, I can't even keep track of what day and time and the 5-day isolation, whatever. But if Micah Parsons is indeed out, TJ Watt a lock for that award. So could be some free money there. I also saw, Matt, that you could bet on both Zach Taylor and Matt LaFleur plus money to win Coach of the Year. Who else would be close? I mean, maybe Mike Vrabel.
Vrabel? Well, I mean, because if they beat the Texans, they get the number one seed. So in terms of voting for things like this, narrative matters. Who had the number one record? Oh, it was the Titans. Also, if they win, you know, they went like 5-3 without Derrick Henry. Yeah. Henry may or may not play this weekend. They like that. A.J. Brown missed a bunch of games. Julio Jones was dog bleep for that team all year. So they could give it to Vrabel with the injured player narrative, number one seed narrative. And also, it's not like they got a great quarterback. It could be like, oh, Matt LaFleur, why did he win? Well, it's like, hey, Aaron, throw the ball. Zach Taylor, what did Zach Taylor do? He said, hey, Joe, there's a guy named Jamar.
Yeah, that's it.
Throw the ball
to
Jamar.
That's all he did.
You know,
throw the ball.
You're Mike Vrabel. You're like, who's my quarterback? Oh, it's Ryan Tannehill? Ah, bleep. So I'd be nervous about Coach of the Year.
Now I am nervous. I may have a little overextended myself on those two wagers. I bet on Taylor. I thought Taylor or LaFleur, one of those two were a lock, and Green Bay may be packing it in on Sunday. It certainly sounds like LaFleur's going to play. They're going to play. Yeah, well, that was completely unintended. Shame but it sounds you. Like LaFleur will play Rodgers, Devontae Adams, at least in the first half against Detroit. And I don't know if you've been seeing what's going on with that betting line. It's swinging massive points based on LaFleur press conferences. Obviously, Detroit, a vastly inferior team to Green Bay on so many fronts. But, you know, if it's Jordan Love quarterbacking the Green Bay Packers for four quarters as opposed to two quarters, that makes a huge difference. So I've seen that line go from Detroit minus two to Detroit plus four within the matter of hours. So that'll be something that I'm tracking. And just to go back on Tennessee, Matt, I was looking at some futures bets this morning, just trying to pontificate some takes on where the value may lie. And I'm seeing Tennessee with worse odds to win the Super Bowl than Buffalo, than Kansas City. I'm not sure that makes sense because we're going to have to work under the assumption that Tennessee will win the number one seed in the AFC. They'll beat Houston, their double-digit favorite. So you get the bye. So Buffalo's going to have to play probably Indy, where there will be three-point favorites in round one. That's almost a coin flip game, let's be honest here. Maybe Buffalo, definitely a slight edge. And then Buffalo's going to have to go potentially on the road, depending on how things shake out with the standings. But Tennessee's going to have home field throughout. They're going to have the big dog, Derrick Henry, ready to rock, well-rested after that foot injury has healed. And I would be a little bit skeptical about not backing Tennessee in the AFC, especially considering you get them at plus 1,200 to win the Super Bowl. I think there's some value there. I think that those odds will definitely improve as the playoffs progress, especially if Henry is indeed ruled good to go, because that's obviously a huge factor for Tennessee.
If you like value and you think that Derrick Henry's going to play against the Texans, you bet Tennessee now, because Tennessee wins, and if Derrick Henry has a good game, those numbers will go down. Sticking on this theme for a second, and I was just talking with Aaron Schatz from over from Football Outsiders.
Love Aaron Schatz. Great guy.
Love Aaron Schatz. Is that, you know, he loves the Dallas Cowboys in terms of value. Now, the Cowboys, they're at now plus 1,200, and that number's probably dipped down a bit because they lost to the Cardinals. Well, listen, Dallas at their best has a great offensive line, has at least two stud receivers, has running backs that can be great. Dak Prescott's been great, and a defense that maybe gives up a bunch of yards, but has playmakers all over the place. Like, Green Bay's a better team, but Micah Parsons, getting a couple sacks and a fumble return touchdown, Randy Gregory, DeMarcus Lawrence. Like, I think Dallas represents also good value at like plus 1,200.
I don't know about Dallas. But here's the thing about Dallas. If you look at their splits home and road, just a dramatic difference in their performance, not to mention NFC East versus non-NFC East. They haven't lost to an NFC East team this year. They've racked up over 38 points per game against teams in their division. But they're 6-5 against everyone else, and they've been pretty pedestrian on both sides of the ball. So I think there's the red, I almost called them their old name, the football team, the Giants,
horrible,
the Eagles. I know, I should be arrested for that. And that whole bump for Dallas playing those terrible teams in their division week after week, I don't know. I mean, yeah, you go up against a team like Green Bay on the road in Lambeau Field in January. You're a team like Dallas who's thrived at home all year. To quote Al's brother, I just don't see it happening.
And by the way, I was totally on board with what you said until you quoted Al's brother. Now I feel good about Dallas again.
But you know what, hammer the Cowboys.
Remember when I made you insecure about your Coach of the Year bet? Now you kind of did the same thing with the NFC East factor. That is a big one. I could counter with, you know, they beat New England. They probably should have beat Tampa, but that was back in week one. Bigger picture. And again, joined by Eric Korolnik from First Up. You wanted to chat about some misconceptions about betting in week 18 when some teams have everything to play for, other teams don't have anything to play for. You had a stat or something that you wanted to share?
I do, and I should credit this tweeter, and I will retweet it on my own social media after we conclude this interview, Matthew.
Huge. That's an influence.
A massive boon for that person. Probably will be a life-changing retweet. But there's this misconception out there that teams that have things to play for will perform better, at least when it comes to betting against the spread, than those that don't. And let's look at a couple of examples. I think of on Saturday afternoon, the Kansas City Chiefs, they have seeding to play for. If they win, they'll finish as a higher seed in the AFC than if they lose, most likely, because Buffalo will beat the Jets. And then you'll see KC and Buffalo flip-flop the 2 and 3 seed in the AFC. So KC has something to play for. But in reality, since 1990, teams that are out of playoff contention are 94-56-4. That's a 63% record against the spread in the final 2 weeks of the season against teams that must win to keep their playoff hopes alive or can improve playoff positioning. So this whole narrative surrounding teams that have nothing to play for really is completely meaningless. In fact, it may go the other way. Teams that have nothing to play for, I think of a team like the Cleveland Browns, who are playing a team in Cincinnati who we've already known they're packing it in, right? Burrow's not playing. Mixon has COVID. I can't imagine they throw out Jamar Chase or Higgins or Boyd, any of those guys. They're resting everyone. I think Cleveland, and we've seen this line shift dramatically already, I think Cleveland comes out and lays a beating on Cincinnati, a team that has nothing to play for. And the players that will be out there for the Bengals, they don't want to get hurt. They have the playoffs next week, matchup against New England or Indy, whoever they end up playing in round one. So I think that's probably the more way to look at it. It would be my estimation.
Also, you're going to have a healthy quarterback for Cleveland. You know, it's not going to be torn labrum Baker Mayfield.
His new nickname.
TL, torn labrum. He's not going to like that one. Yeah, I see Cleveland. It opened. There was a 6-point favorite. It's kind of stayed at 6. Some places at 6.5. Oof, that total of 30. I've seen that total as low as 37.5.
Oof.
That's a low number.
This is a CFL game? Oy.
That is Ottawa versus the BC Lions when Michael Riley is out getting really inside the weeds with you. All right, AK, always appreciate. I'll be with you tomorrow at 8:20.
Can't wait.
8:20 in the morning with you and Olympic hopeful Carlo Colaiacovo.
Well, I think we can dash those hopes pretty quickly. I've seen Carlo without a shirt on recently. He will not be going to Beijing.
Well, there's always what are the events for the larger gentlemen? Like shot put. That's a
Colaiacovo's in there. Is that Carlo Colaiacovo in shot put? Yes, it is. Oh, he hurt his shoulder. Oh, who knew?
Torn labrum. Well, you know, he was trying to kick an extra point. I think that's a segment for First Up. What events could Carlo medal in at either the summer or winter games?
That's a brilliant idea. I'm going to get my crack research staff on that right now, and we'll rehash that at 8:20 tomorrow morning, Matthew.
Get 20 fingers and sausage fingers all over that. All right, my man, you take care. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you, Matty.
That is Aaron Korolnik from TSN Edge and, of course, First Up.